It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's August the 23rd, 1981, and it's program number 507. For those of you who listen to this broadcast, I suggest again that if it goes fast for you, and I know it goes fast, a lot of names and events, send a self-addressed stamped envelope and 25 cents, and I'll send you a bibliography of the program. Last week I had about 40 important news items on the printed sheet that goes out with the tape cassettes, and many of you didn't get to hear those stories on the air, but the sources are on the printed sheet, and the same is true this evening. There's so many news stories flowing or gushing out that I can barely give you the title and the date and let you know that I'm classifying them and then let you out on your own to the library to get books and information if the subjects interest you. I was in the car yesterday driving from a church in Carmel to a wedding reception here in Monterey, and on the NBC News there was a description of a ambush in El Salvador, and along the road they discovered, I think it was 74 headless bodies. I didn't see it in the news, the newspapers today, the Sunday papers. Maybe it'll be printed up later. I heard it on the NBC News. Earlier this week, I read a story about a circus group in El Salvador, and they had cut off the heads, decapitated two of the clowns and five of the employees of the circus. There was a time when I could read the news and just go through the various events, the assassinations, the murders, the napalming, and classify it and categorize it and finger who I thought was to blame for these atrocities, the accumulated guilt. And in some way I could control my anger. Very seldom do I really feel like crying when I read the paper. But it's getting real, it's getting bad. And it's getting bad because we go, weave in and out of events, and we hear these things, and then on comes another story, and on comes an event, and young couples getting married, not even aware, not reading the paper, families related to them, not knowing what the world around them is about, or not even asking the people that know what it's about, and people enveloping themselves in this world of not believing, which protects them temporarily, and then all of a sudden something happens and they wake up and realize that the ostrich game, as I mentioned before, just won't work or won't wash away. I was talking to Penn Jones this afternoon on the telephone. He's the long researcher into the Kennedy assassination who's published four books, and Penn was saying, America's falling apart at the seams and they're going to get us all. And I said, well, don't be so sure. What if we're the last two to survive and have to watch it from that point of view? Don't be so sure that when it comes fast, like in Nagasaki or Hiroshima, and that when a bomb falls on your head, you live to the fullest and then you go. There's a gray area there between full life and full death, and there's a lot of suffering, and the suffering is going on all over the world. And the purpose of the research, my research and others, is to try to stem the flow of the insanity. And the scene in El Salvador reminded me of the Ustashi and the Nazis. And, of course, they're Nazi-trained people and American forces and American money doing this decapitation down in El Salvador. And as long as people allow it, it will happen. And there are too many people allowing it. And it really makes me sick. This morning is newspaper, or this week's, Alexander Haig said, in quotes of, I guess it was 2 days ago, the Libya incident is closed. I'm not going to discuss much about the plane fighting and the incident over there, except to say that it came just a few weeks, 2 weeks after headlines that the CIA was planning to kill Gaddafi. And Alexander Haig thinks he can have troops training right to the edge of the Libyan water and provoke them. And then he pulls back and says, that's closed, that's over, and we'll show you, we'll hit back again, we're strong. Well, Gaddafi didn't accept that, and of course, in this morning's news, and all of you read it across the country, he said, we're ready to fight World War III. It's here, bring him on. And he blamed the United States. He says they have American fanaticism that will not end until there is another Vietnam. The United States armed Gaddafi. We trained the troops. We sent the assassination weapons. We've dealt with him constantly, and I believe we sent all those things over in advance so that when we killed him, we had the equipment in Libya to work with instead of being accused of sending it later. After we killed Allende in Chile, we began to send money back through the World Bank and major corporations to Pinochet in Chile, and then we could be accused of supporting a Nazi fascist dictator in Chile. So had they been smart, we would have sent more troops and guns and ammunition and green berets and killers to totally infiltrate the country, which is what I think we've done in Libya. And Mr. Gaddafi is turning against us. He'll meet us head on. This is what Adolf Hitler said. The United States corporations funded Adolf Hitler, and they funded Gaddafi. And I think that you have to respect the guy for saying we're convinced that Americans are fanatics, and this might be the occasion to start World War III. Now, this man isn't stupid. He's far from stupid, and he named seven major oil companies that go along with him, including Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. And the insanity of the people in power in this country is so outrageous. If you think of it, Kuwait and Saudi Arabia supply most of the first and second largest dealers, the suppliers of American oil, and Gaddafi and Libya is third. If we need the oil, then don't have war training over there. Don't try to kill the man if you're buying the oil from him. If you're self-sufficient, stay away if you don't like his policies, or try to deal or try to mediate. But when you meet him head on, he is a man who isn't afraid, and I don't believe people are going to be afraid of Ronald Reagan or Alexander Haig. He made the statement, let's get this over with. We'll meet you with World War III, and I respect him for that position. Another article in the paper just today, in Libya's wake, who's running the United States? And there's a story about advisor Edwin Meese. They call him President Meese, and how he didn't wake up the president during the confrontation of the airplanes over Libya with the Libyan fighters. This article says, during World War II, Franklin Roosevelt was often awakened to be told about battle developments. Harry Truman would hit the roof if he were asleep and there was a Libyan-U.S. dogfight. Lyndon Johnson would go in the war room, walk down in his pajamas to the Situation Room, and wouldn't stand for it. In the Reagan administration, Meese continues to make decisions and pronouncements usually made by the president. Now, as I say, a few weeks ago, July 27th, I still have the headlines here, CIA plan to kill Gaddafi, Casey of the CIA faces a new grilling. Then to cover that up, on August the 7th, there is a large article in the Los Angeles Times about tensions threaten Mauritania stability. The chronology was that as soon as the story broke that we were to kill Gaddafi, and this was broken in the Newsweek article that came right on top of the planning of a espionage operation in Africa by the Washington Post. Then the Washington Post added 3 days later, oh no, it was Mauritania that we were going into, and I mentioned that on a broadcast last week or the week before. So July 28th, they changed it, and we were supposed to overthrow Mauritania. So August the 7th, the Los Angeles Times has an article updating Mauritania. Then August the 4th, Wall Street Journal has some small article about the Indian Ocean. And then this last week, the Washington Post ran a story. The target for overthrow or coup wasn't Mauritania, it was Mauritius. I was hysterical with laughter when I saw the map. Mauritius is a little island. You can look up the facts in any of your almanacs, a tiny island off the Indian Ocean. And Mauritania is over on the west side of Africa, on the Atlantic side. As soon as the story broke that the coup was supposed to take place in Mauritania, according to the Washington Post, the people over there went up the walls. That's the way they reported. They climbed the walls and said, what are you doing here? And so they retracted and said, oh no, Mauritania sounds so much like Mauritians that we made a mistake. So the Mauritians originally went up the wall, and the story switched around, and now it's Mauritius and not Mauritania. This story gets worse and worse, and of course, Mr. Casey is in limbo, and he threatened to blackmail this country with more espionage secrets if he was forced to go before the House Intelligence Committee. So Barry Goldwater and the others backed down, and of course, he holds a lot of Trump cards. There's a big story. I'm not going into it this week, but I'll be updating it soon. It has to do with the arrest of a party, four people, who bombed the Harvey Resort Hotel Casino. It's an important story because the man who was named the chief character in there, Mr. Burgess, B-I-R-G-E-S, is a native of Hungary. He worked for Hitler's SS troops. He was a member of the Gestapo and Hitler's team. And then he worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. And he's asking now that he not be tried in Reno, that his life is in danger. And he said it would take only 20 or 30,000, and we four witnesses would be killed. Who is responsible for that? Nobody would be responsible. Nobody would talk. There would only be four dead people. Now, he's afraid that he'll be killed at the time of the trial if they carry it on in Reno. And he also said this week, many people have been assassinated, including bosses and witnesses, with very little trouble. And if we're transferred to Reno, we will never reach the court. I continually go on this broadcast about witnesses that are killed, people that are assassinated. So this member of Hitler's stormtroopers that worked with Adolf Hitler in Hungary and then comes to the United States and said he worked with the CIA is the person who has been arrested along with three other people for bombing, not only bombing the Harvey's Resort Hotel Casino in Reno, but he had a lot of ammunition and weapons for bigger operations than that. At the time of these bombings, I called these Reagan's Reichstag, that we'd have a series of bombings and terrorism so we could accumulate facts on terrorism in America, and it always goes back to bank robberies, Nazis, Gestapo, and the CIA. Another matter I'll take up in future at length is that Taiwan jet disaster and the killing of the professor from Carnegie Mellon that was thrown out the window in Taiwan that's causing a scandal. This professor was interrogated by the police in Taiwan. Just this last week, 2 weeks ago, he was murdered. And just this week, yesterday, the investigation began on a large Taiwan jet disaster. There are people from the United States on that plane that were killed, and one from Vancouver, Washington. It'll be interesting to know who was on the plane. It completely disintegrated and was blown up, and the flight recorder and so forth have not been located. And I doubt if they will be able to finger exactly who. If we don't have a list of passengers, we won't know the relationship to the Taiwan secret police. But the United States government is in a very hot position because they're intimidating people in the United States, like the Shah of Iran, Savak, secret police did in the United States. And the Vietnamese killed a person in San Francisco who was favorable to Ho Chi Minh and the North Vietnamese. We have a terror group in the United States of Laotians, Vietnamese, Croatians, anti-Castro Cubans, people from other countries who are killing in the United States where we're supposed to have freedom of speech, and they're killing opponents or people that expose the repression or the fascist dictatorships that we're supporting overseas. So that jet disaster comes right on top of a major scandal in the media of the death of the professor and also the involvement of the Taiwanese in the United States of killing people and threatening them here. Another set item in the news that I want to go at length with in the future has to do with that Christopher Boyce, the spy who's been on the loose for 19 months. He left Lompoc prison. They believed that he had several aliases. They believed that he was in South Africa. I have reason to connect at length, that I don't have time tonight, the Christopher Boyce story, walking out of Lompoc jail. Lompoc is where that art gallery was, where three people were murdered recently in Santa Barbara, in Ronald Reagan's hometown, that involved diamond dealing in South Africa, a wife in London, a court reporter in Seattle who was associated with the man that's been charged with those three murders in Santa Barbara. Christopher Boyce was located living up in the Seattle area in Port Angeles, and because he was a jogger or a health food freak or it liked a certain vitamin E, it gave the federal marshals a chance to put agents into health food stores, to jogging stores, to campsites, and it's a wonderful place to have. They had FBI waitresses and agents with fishermen, loggers, and campers. This Boyce has had quite an activity that I think also links to the Wells Fargo story, and I'll do more on that later, but he was caught up in Seattle just this week. An article in the San Francisco Chronicle by Carl Bernstein on Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, United States, and China arming Afghanistan, the rebels, to fight the Soviet Union. And there's a map of each of those countries' involvement. Well, one reason the Soviet Union went into Afghanistan when it did was that the United States and the CIA were arming all the borders of Afghanistan with intent for war against the Soviet Union by 1985, and they took the step of taking Afghanistan to secure a border other than the Soviet Union on their southern side. But this article is by Carl Bernstein of Watergate fame, who wrote The Final Days and All the President's Men. And he has maps and areas of the Egyptians training, the Saudi Arabians training, Pakistan, China, and the United States, and our involvement in trying to recapture Afghanistan for the CIA. Another article I want at length in the future, always, if we have time, to go into William Casey's background and that Max Ugel. And while Casey has been called before the House Committee on his involvement in the CIA and his financial holdings, he's been pulling a Philip Agee. Philip Agee had his passport taken away for naming names, but Casey is getting even with the investigators. So he gave various members of Congress an 11-page text to the senators on Capitol Hill, and he exposed his recent travels to Europe, Asia, Central America, Middle East, and he visited 20 station chiefs in the area. Now, Casey mentioned people in the CIA that have never been mentioned before, and he's using names, bringing them out in the open, such as Claire George, the director of the clandestine services, John Stein, the counterintelligence covert action, John McMahon, Harry Rowan, new chief of domestic collection, Joe Screw, S-H-U-R-G-R-U-E, didn't pronounce it right, but that's okay. I'll give you the spelling. Jim Glarum, this is from the Houston Post, and Casey's getting mad. He's naming people publicly. It isn't in all the newspapers, but he's giving the congressman a lot of names, and he's visiting a lot of countries. Now, I use the term getting unglued very often on this program, because for a long period of time, since World War II, the espionage establishment has been doing a lot of mischief, illegal deeds, overthrowing countries for particular profits of corporations, killing heads of states, leaders in this country, presidents, candidates, senators, members of the CIA, FBI, witnesses to trials. There has been a lot of drug dealing. There's been a lot of murders. There's been a lot of dirty work. And the important thing is that many of the systems are unglued now. The banks are being exposed. People are coming out with massive amount of articles, good information, and the pieces of the puzzle are coming together. So Mr. Casey has been taking trips to 20 station chiefs that you don't know about, and he, I would say, is nervous as hell. And I think the whole gang that have worked since the National Security Council was formed in 1947, who were in the OSS that became the CIA, have reason to have anxiety because they don't know when a James McCord is going to come forward and tell the truth and spill more beans, such as we had at the time of Watergate, or they don't know who's going to be murdered next, like John Paisley, Sheffield Edwards, William Harvey. Many of the top agents were just slain outright, Gary Underhill, witnesses to the Kennedy assassination, and others are hiding, and they hoping, I'm sure, that no major breaks come, and they know that they're vulnerable because these past deeds are indeed coming together very nicely and pretty fast right now, and I'm not pessimistic about it. I think within maybe 2 or 3 months, I'll have a pretty good chart for you that you can get with the tape cassettes or by sending a self-addressed stamped envelope of the major characters in these roles of conspiracy. There's a new book out about H.L. Hunt and the oil money in Texas, on the Texas rich, and there's a page in there about Bill Wood giving H.L. Hunt a diagram of his, with his name on it, of the involvement of the Kennedy assassination. Well, Bill Wood was Bill Boxley, and I gave him that. He was a double agent, and I drew that diagram when I left Carmel and went to New Orleans to see Jim Garrison when he arrested Clay Shaw for the role of killing John Kennedy. And I wanted to show Garrison the links of the Texas people to the killing of Kennedy. And I did a detailed diagram of the names involved in the Texas area, one of them being H.L. Hunt. And then Bill Boxley took that back to H.L. Hunt, and this new book mentions that diagram and chart, and that's the one that I did after my 8 years of research in the Kennedy assassination, of breaking down the witness testimony and so forth. So it's interesting that the chart that I created and made was in the hands of H.L. Hunt, and that's the one that I took to Bill Boxley, who Jim Garrison charged with being a double agent, and he was working back in Texas, going from New Orleans to Texas, and working with H.L. Hunt, the oil man. There's another book out. I haven't read it. It's a book review, and I want to call attention to it now and give you more of this later on the air, because this sounds very exciting. The book review is in the Village Voice, August the 11th, August 12th to 18th, for those of you that have these tape cassettes and broadcasts in New York and can still get it, August the 12th to 18th, Village Voice. It's a book review by Charles Mann. He wrote the review. The book is called The Declassified Eisenhower. Blanche Weiss and Cook wrote it. It's a double-day book. And I have it's a three-page review of very, very important information, but there is one sentence in here I'd like to share with you, and then we'll get back to more of it later. Cook, according to this book reviewer, sees the Soviet Revolution as the actual beginning of the Cold War. There is no way to make sense of appeasement, the twisted course of World War II, or the second phase of the world, what we call the Cold War, which started in 1945 when World War II was over, without understanding how it all began in 1917. Lenin belligerently removed almost 9 million square miles of the Earth's surface from the reach of Western entrepreneurs, and they were terrified that this action could be repeated in other nations, and if that occurred, the United States would lose out its grab on corporations and so forth. And that is the bottom line of the insanity that we read in the news today. Everything that we're doing to pollute the earth, to take away from the people, the poor people, to conscript them into the army or put them to prison, to eliminate their good health standards, their hospitalization, to reduce them to slavery is what Adolf Hitler did. The American corporations did this in Germany, and they're doing it in the United States because their only goal is the war against the Soviet Union. And whatever it takes, if they have to increase the budget for the weapons and give you nothing, they'll give you nothing. They won't give you education. They're not going to provide housing. They're not going to provide health care. And those are the three things that I've talked about on the air for the past 10 years. There are a group of insane people who simply cannot live with a economic system where people have control of the resources and the benefit of the resources goes to the people or the factories, that they own a share of it. They may all have less, but they all have something. And they're not walking around with organized crime and mafia and hitmen and drugging the major cities, and the recreation is less complex. They don't have television in every room or a car in every home, but they have rapid transit and they have transportation and health care and so forth equal to ours. And the insanity that went on after the Russian Revolution created the funding of Adolf Hitler, the negation of the Versailles Treaty, and then it went on to making a war in Europe, and when we couldn't win Russia, we began to arm again. Now, this book review tells about Eisenhower coming home from the war and becoming the president of Columbia University, and then the corporations taking him under their wing and transferring him around to the various meetings of the corporations and the corporation heads like General Electric and so forth. And it goes into the legacy Eisenhower gave us of course, meeting with John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles and taking over Southeast Asia in 1954 when the French were to leave, or the Bay of Pigs operation they planned before Kennedy was president, and the overthrow in Guatemala of the president there for United Fruit Company, and going to bed with the Nazis like Darlan and French North Africa and the Vichy anti-Semites, the people that worked with Adolf Hitler at the time. And it goes into Eisenhower's role in Southeast Asia, North Africa, in Iran with Mossadegh overthrown, and gives him the credit for not being the simple-minded, homespun little Ike that he was supposed to be. This book was based on 10 years of documents, the declassified Eisenhower, and I'll do a lot more on it. One interesting item in the book review tells how when the corporations begin to wine and dine him, they take him out to California to the Bohemian Grove. I also have another article I brought in, if I get time to get at the bottom of piles of material I bring in each week, about Alexander Haig's career and how he launched it at the Bohemian Grove to be president of the United States someday. That is that little grove in California where every summer the real wheeler and dealers, the war machines, the moguls, the people who profit from war, the institutions and organizations that make the war, whether it's John McCone from ITT or the Bechtel Corporation or Corning Glass and U.S. Steel and Hewlett-Packard, you name it. The real biggies that decide which countries exist, which heads of states live or die, that's where they dress up like girlies in weather skirts and tutus and dance in their little colleges and burn all their cares away. And it's an all-male gang who can do whatever their thing is. And their last meeting was terrifying, some of the things that came up just this last summer, or enough the discussion to make your hair stand on end. But Haig's decision to make him the president was launched out there. The decision for Eisenhower to be catapulted from Columbia University, where they encouraged him to read a book there. The articles, the book review suggests he hardly read a book at Columbia. But he was too busy with his mistress. They fixed him up in Europe and at home. And the trick is to get them a woman, keep them happy, introduce them to the head of the corporations, make the decisions for them. But also this book says he was plenty mean, like Richard Nixon or Ronald Reagan. These guys look like simpletons, but it'd be hard to create what is in their gray matter or their brains. I think they were probably conniving little bastards from the time they were little, squealing on their brothers and goodness knows what else. You couldn't make them that bad when they get in a position of power. They must have been psyched out years ago by the crummiest people around and put in to lead this country, and the nice people can't visualize how bad they are until they get in the vice, and they go around thinking, well, if there's headless El Salvadorians, they must be communists. They just simply cannot believe how mean Alexander Haig or Caspar Weinberger or Ronald Reagan or Edwin Meese and their mentality are. If you're nice, it's hard to visualize those people, so you have to blame the victim for his own mishap. You think, well, he stepped out of line because these people can't be that bad. It's important to take another look at the newspaper, the history, the books, and realize they're not only bad, but they're rotten. Now I'm going to go to a different subject that's close to my heart before we reach the end of this first half hour. The Continuing Inquiry is a newsletter Ben Jones gets out from Texas. Many of you subscribe to it. Some of you don't have it. And this last issue that came out, it was a little late, it was June 1981. There are many good articles I will share with you on the air, but there's one by Marvin Longton. I don't know him at all. He's a researcher from Rhode Island, Penn said. He's going to get me his address. It's called The Nugenhand Bank, John Paisley, Lee Harvey Oswald Link with a question mark. For those of you who don't know the name, Frank Nugent is a member of the CIA who was murdered. Michael Hand is alive. He's a member of heroin traffic, CIA assassination teams. They were partners that formed a bank that folded quickly. $55 million is still floating around. It's in Australia. The bank folded in Australia. John Paisley was a man from the National Security Council that worked with the Soviet Union counterintelligence, who I said worked with Lee Harvey Oswald's communication master. That was Yuri Nosenko. Who came from the Soviet Union to the United States right after Oswald came to this country. He fled to this country. Now, I've talked many times on this program about that bank and the links to the assassination teams in Chile, Operation Condor, that Jack Anderson writes about, and to the people that have been killing the heads of states, whether it was to overthrow Iran, Guatemala, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, shooting George Wallace, and hundreds of other murders. There is a link here, and I was the first person in the country of any researcher to make these connections. And in this article, he goes on about the Nugenhand Bank and their funding, and he then goes back. He says, it's interesting to go a little further. Keep in mind May Brussel's previous piece on Lee Harvey Oswald in the Soviet Union. I wrote that for Penn in February 22, 1979, called Yuri Nosenko, The Missing Link, a very important short article I did for Penn Jones newsletter, and he refers to it twice in the link of Lee Harvey Oswald, because that is the connection of Lee Harvey Oswald to Navy intelligence, to the National Security Council. Very important connections, and this is the first article giving me credit for making the links and for seeing those connections himself. We'll take a break for 1 minute and then go back to some other important stories in the news.